on that. Anyone else have an announcement? Okay. All right, well, I've been blessed being here this evening. It was interesting listening to different of the thoughts, the devotion on just checking our lives and seeing how we're spending our life. You know, stewardship is about money, we think of, but it's also just how we're using up our lives. This evening, I wanted to just share a few thoughts here on the thought of joy, joyfulness. Are you a joyful person? Are we a joyful church? Does it matter if we're joyful or not? Part of the reason I think that maybe this subject stood out to me a little bit, there's a couple reasons, but one of them, you know, I don't think I would have graded myself too bad in this area of joyfulness. Not real good, but not too bad. But in the last year or so, different ones in my family have made comments and made me think about that, stop and think, you know, about my joy in life. You know, why do I have a furrow in my brow? My children have said already. Why am I not very happy when I'm doing paperwork? Why don't I smile more when I'm preaching? And so I guess I think it's good for me to think about this subject, if not, even if the rest of you are fairly joyful. This morning I wasn't able to be here, but I did call in and listen, and I was blessed by the sermon on suffering. And now I want to talk about joy. Are these two subjects opposite, as I thought about that? Is joy and suffering opposite? Can they be in the same room together? Can you have joy and suffering? Is it that you have a bad day today and hopefully tomorrow is a joyful day? You know, I think in the eyes of the world and their system, that joy and suffering are on opposite ends of the spectrum, if there's a gauge to measure that. Can suffering and joy exist at the same time? You know, as I thought about happiness, joy, happiness is probably one of the most sought after things in life by mankind, is joy and happiness. And in the United States, the Declaration of Independence, it says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienated rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And how are we doing? How are people doing? How is America doing in the pursuit of happiness? People will do all kinds of things to try to capture and have joy and happiness in their lives. You look around, pleasure is a huge one. Money, hobbies, eating, drinking, drugs. There's just many things that people are spending their time pursuing joy or happiness. And we are a country, you know, of almost more things and money than anywhere in the world. But are we a happy country? Are we a joyful country? I think that should say something about the source of happiness. And we all know, we've heard the stories of the rich and the famous, the celebrities in Hollywood. Many of those will end up either dying young or committing suicide. And they have everything that this world has to offer at their fingertips. What about us? How are we doing? And we can look on and we can say that. We can tell each other that, you know, that's not the answer to happiness. And watch all their vain attempts. But where do we look for joy? I think often we slip into that same mindset. It's just that gravitational pull of pursuing the things of this world. The verses I wanted to read happened to be in Philippians as well. It was mentioned tonight and this morning. Chapter 3 was read. I want to read some verses in chapter 4. I want to look on this subject. And before we read this, I want to remind us again of the setting of this chapter, of this book of Philippians. You know, Paul is in prison. And he is writing to the church here. This is a man that has been through a tremendous amount of suffering, if you want to think about suffering. And now he's behind bars. And if you think about that, not only is he a joyful person, but he's writing and encouraging and telling others, rejoice in the Lord. Rejoice in the Lord always. And that was a big part of what drew me to this book a little while back, was as I read that, it just stood out to me, Paul's whole spirit and attitude about life, and how what a joyful person he was, and encouraging joy in spite of his rough life here on earth. You know, it wasn't just his physical suffering. He was rejected. He went from city to city, getting kicked out, criticized, but somehow that didn't damper his joy. Now, why wasn't he a discouraged man? Why wasn't he sad? And as we read this chapter, I'd like you to think about things in this chapter that maybe be connected to joy, that go along with joy, that maybe are inseparable from joy. I'm going to read, I think, the first 20 verses here. So let's read that. Philippians 4, verse 1. Therefore, my brethren, dearly beloved and longed for, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, my dearly beloved. I beseech you, Eudeus, and beseech that they be of the same mind in the Lord. And I entreat thee also, true yoke fellow, help those women which labor with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and with other my fellow laborers, whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and see in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you. But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherewith ye were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound everywhere. And in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Notwithstanding ye have well done that ye did communicate with my afflictions. Now ye Philippians, know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. For even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity, not because I desire a gift, but I desire fruit that may abound to your account. But I have all and abound, I am full, having received of Epaphroditus and things which were sent from you, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. But my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. Now unto God and our Father be glory forever and ever. Amen. So as we think about this, is it okay to be a grumpy Christian? Is that okay? At certain times in our lives, depending on the day, depending on what happens in my day, it's a bad day. I get to the end of the day, things are stacking up, the children are not listening. Is it okay just to be a little bit grumpy, if not plain mad? If the day is bad enough, is it okay? And I don't think anybody wants to be a grumpy person, to be an unhappy, an unjoyful person. But it happens. It's a human tendency if our focus is wrong. Maybe we need to define, I thought, maybe a little bit of what joy is. You know, joy is real similar to happiness. It's not exactly the same thing as happiness by definition. But in looking it up in the Strong's, there, depending on where you looked and which word, but joy and rejoice would have the thought of a cheerfulness. Or another one I liked was like a calm delight. Or calmly happy, to be glad. So joyful isn't foolishness. It's not hilarious laughter, foolish joking, and lots of good times and big smiles all the time. You know, sometimes maybe you meet someone like that and they're almost overbearing. They're not for real. They put on this front that they're trying to be happy. But that's not necessarily what joy is. It's a calm delight. It doesn't mean you're always even smiling. But you're at peace. You're at rest. You're joyful. Life is okay. The circumstances, maybe not what you would like, but it's okay. One thing I think we already touched on this, but we just need to remember that earthly pleasure and things do not equal joy. The things and earthly pleasure and good times do not equal joy. We forget that so often. So, of course, what is the source of joy? That's kind of where this whole thing probably heads to, the source of joy. You know, there's the phrase that we hear, the joy of the Lord is your strength. And that has an interesting story behind it in Nehemiah. But we can't go into that tonight. The joy of the Lord is your strength, Ezra told the people there in this time. And I think we see that as we look back at Paul's life. You know, he was beaten. He was shipwrecked. He was stoned. He was chased around from city to city. And now he's sitting in this prison, probably nursing his wounds and writing a letter admonishing people to be joyful. To rejoice. Have a calm delight about you. You know, Paul was on a mission. And his mission wasn't about having fun. His mission wasn't about a big business. But he was on a mission to serve Jesus Christ. And for him to live was Christ, and to die was gain. This life, death, wasn't the worst thing that could happen. And so that could not rob his joy. All the hardship in this life did not rob him, because that was not what he was living for. And I think that might be an indication sometimes, is when we are robbed of our joy so quickly, what does that say about us? What is our purpose? What is our goal? What are we after in life? You know, what gives you, what gives me the strength and purpose in life? Is it the joy of the Lord? Or is it the joy of something else? Where do we go when we are feeling weak, when we are feeling like we have no joy? What do we turn to? There's lots of options that we could turn to. In Psalm 16:11, there's a verse, "Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy, and at thy right hand are pleasures forevermore." In thy presence is fullness of joy. I think that's so true, but I think that we so often bypass that, the true source of joy. But I think it's just a foundational thing to this whole thought of joy, is if we can get that in our mind, is what truly is the source of joy. Where does it come from? Where are we looking for it? I think it's important that we are a joyful people, that we are a people with a calm delight. We're settled. We're cheerful. And maybe the worse the circumstances, the louder the testimony when we're not shook up, when we don't fall to pieces. I think it's a loud testimony. I think one of the most attractive and effective witnessing methods is a person that is just joyful and is happy in life. I think this is probably especially true with our children. I think it impacts our children much more than we realize, is our attitude, our spirit, in just day-to-day life. When we come home from work in the evenings, we're sitting around. You know, we can, as dads, we can sit around and have all kinds of good discussions about church problems or church decisions or people's problems. But, you know, if we don't have the joy of the Lord at home, we have nothing to offer to our children. Just simple joy in everyday living. A calm delight. It impacts people, our children, much more than the words that we say. We can have our family devotions consistently every night and memorize scripture and sing songs, but unless we have the joy of the Lord, it'll probably drive them away. Another thing about joy, or its lack of, is that it's contagious. That's one thing that I've noticed different times in my life, is that you may be sitting in a room with a group of four or five guys just visiting, or friends, and someone walks in, and depending on, you know, the countenance of that person, if they're sober and solemn and blue, what happens? Often, depending who it is, it can make a difference how influential that person is. But, you know, it's like a blanket comes over the room. There's just a heaviness. It's like closing the damper on a fire. Just everything kind of dies down. And it just affects people. But the opposite is also true. You know, you can be sitting around discouraged about something and somebody comes in and they have a smile and they're a little bit cheerful, and it just raises the whole atmosphere of the room. It can raise everyone's spirits. It's contagious. And I thought about this the other night. I was actually thinking about this subject just a couple nights ago at the reception. I went up to Brother Andrew and said, "How you doing, Andrew?" And he just looked at me and said, "The joy of the Lord is my strength." And I was blessed by that. And then we visited a little bit more. And it especially stood out to me because I was kind of thinking about this. I wasn't sure if I should, where to go with this. And it's just an example, I guess, of encouraging people. It's not just about how I'm feeling, and if I'm joyful, and if I'm not, then that's my problem. But we impact people with our moods and our joy or lack of joy. So being an encouragement and cheerful, you know, this world is a hurting world. There's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of discouragement. And they need people with some hope beyond this life. I would like to look at just a few other things here that almost always, I think, go with joy. And maybe that helped get it straight in our mind. Sometimes just analyzing, you know, like love or joy or patience is, we kind of know we don't have it, but we're not sure what to do about it. And sometimes when we know that they're tied into certain things, it can help us maybe pinpoint maybe the problem in our lives, why we're lacking this. I think one main thing, one thing, and different of these were in this chapter that I read, maybe not just real specifically, but it didn't mention them. I think it's tied in. The first one I have is peace. You know, it's pretty hard to have joy if you don't have peace. And a, you know, I think a joyful person has peace, is a peaceful person. Peace with God. Peace with God comes from obedience to God and a clear conscience before God and doing what you know is right. Often people act confused in this world. They don't know what to do. You know, there's so many hard decisions, but so often they're not starting with the things that they do know to do. And if we just start there, doing what we do know is right and keep our conscience clear and our vision clear, I think then we can walk and keep going. And I think that that is tied in with peace. And of course, the opposite is a lack, is a turbulence. A lack of peace in our life is a very, you cannot have joy without peace. Another one in verse 6 was about, is gratefulness or thankfulness. And some of this was mentioned tonight in some of the topics, I think. Now, gratefulness goes hand in hand again with a joyful person. If you are not a if you are not a grateful person, if you are not thankful, like I think it was David Gingrich said, everything that we have has been given to us. And if we don't realize that, and we start living life, and we start think we deserve everything we have, and we become grumpy when something is taken away, and we don't see those things as a gift, and it's so easy to do, down to the sunrise, like Levi was talking about, and just the beauty of nature and the little things that happen every day. If we can't stop and be thankful, it's hard to have joy if we're not a thankful person. And again, I want to emphasize that gratefulness has almost nothing to do with our circumstances. Some of the most grateful people are those that seem to have adverse circumstances, that maybe are handicapped or have sickness. And they're so grateful. They're so thankful. And they have joy. Another one was read as well, is contentment. Just being content. You know, we have so much stuff like never before. Stuff and things. And we're probably, this country is probably just maybe more discontent than ever, wanting more. And I think that is just true. The more we have, the tendency is the more we want. I find that in my life. It's just a little bit more. But can we be satisfied with our lot in life? Just what God has given to us? Or we always got to be looking for something better, a better house, a better job, a better church? You know, not that some of these things are wrong to change, but if we're that kind of a person where we're just fluid, always never finding, never what we want, and unsettled all the time, discontented, you know, godliness with contentment is great gain. And without contentment, there'll be no joy. I believe there, again, it's another thing that always almost goes hand in hand with joy. Now, another thing is the mind, a godly mind. And this is in verse 8 here. And a few months ago, I don't know, it might have been half a year ago, so I was listening on this talk, just this secular talk, about happiness. And it was really good, but it had nothing to do with biblical basis or God. But they didn't realize it, I don't think, but a lot of it was biblically backed up. It was biblical points. And the one thing that they said that I found was interesting, that they discovered that a person that has a wandering mind is not as happy. And it doesn't necessarily mean, now we're not necessarily talking about thinking wrong things or sinful things. That would be an obvious thing. But they're just talking about a wandering mind. And they said the average person's mind wanders to other things at any given time than what he's doing, 30 to 50% of the time. So that means roughly, what would it be, 50 to 70% of the time, you might be listening to what I'm saying, and the other part, you're thinking about what you're going to eat tonight when you get home or your work tomorrow. So I'm not sure how much you've heard so far, but if you're the average person, your mind wanders. And I think that's interesting. That thought stood out to me. And since then, I have thought about that. And I've tried to discipline myself in that. And we become so efficient and so fast. And I know what this is like. I probably feel like I'm wasting my time if I'm just driving down the road. If I'm not listening to something or on the phone or thinking at least about the next thing. But just to be actually thinking about what we're doing. Sitting at the supper table and just thinking about what my 7-year-old is telling me. Or thinking about what I'm doing. I'm weeding the garden and thinking about weeding the garden. And I believe that's true. That when our minds are engaged in what we're actually doing, we tend to be more happy in life than if we're always ahead or always behind thinking about something else. And it struck me then that as I read this passage, that, you know, in a way, it talks about that in verse 8, not directly in that, but it's talking about controlling our mind, what to think on, a controlled mind. And also in Matthew 5, I believe I read that in devotions, not the exact verses, but, you know, the thought about not worrying about tomorrow. I think worry is an extreme robber of joy. To always be worrying about the next thing. I remember a handicapped boy at Faith Mission Home when I worked there. He was interesting, and he would look ahead to zoo day or whatever it was for months and talk about it and could just drive you crazy about it. But you know, when the day came, he didn't even enjoy it that much. He couldn't live in the moment. He was always looking forward to the next thing. And I think that's how we often are. We're always looking to the next thing, or maybe we're always looking back at how good it used to be. And we'd have a hard time just living in the moment, now, today. Jesus said, don't worry about tomorrow. It'll take care of itself. Live in the moment. Live in today. Okay, I'm going to quit here. But another one is serving others. Serving is another trait of a joyful person. I think God created us to be serving people. And when we turn that around and we start wanting to be served, our joy is soon lost. So, if you forget everything else, if you only heard 30% of what I said, remember these two things. That the source of true joy, it's a basic thought, comes from God. It really does. The joy of the Lord is your strength. And joy is not rooted in God, then it's just a counterfeit joy. It won't last. And the other thing is that the source of godly joy does not depend on our circumstances. Does not depend on all of life's circumstances that I'm going through, but rather it's the focus and attitude about my circumstances, how I view them. So often we find ourselves, you know, discontented, unhappy, and it's because of, but it's really not. It's a lack of focus in our life. Let's not have the victim mentality when we don't have our joy. And remember Paul as he sat in prison nursing his wounds and the words that he wrote here in Philippians 4. He said, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. We could have a song, Johnny.